Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes me feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer With Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. It's February 14th, Tuesday, 2012, and we're here with Jen Swartman from the Blind Tiger. How are
hey,
you, Jen?
I'm great. It's good to see you.
We miss you.
Oh, I've missed you guys, too. I mean, but I haven't been away for so long, although I've been around. I've traveled quite a bit.
Well, let's give a shout-out to our sponsor first. We've got Beer Sessions Radio is sponsored by GreatBrewers.com. GreatBrewers.com is your online connection to the world of craft beer. Find out about Beer Cloud, a mobile app to help you locate your favorite beers, store tasting notes, and get beer and food pairing ideas and more. Again, GreatBrewers.com brings the American beer community together. And also, let's give a thanks to the Good Beer Seal, GoodBeerSeal.com, an association of 34 New York City beer bars that serve, promote, and support good beer. There's a lot going on with the Good Beer Seal, and keep tuned for that in 2012. All right, so it's Jen Swartman, Jimmy Carboni. We got Chris Schoenberger here, the editor from Time Out New York. The big beer issue just came out. We got Josh Schnaffner from New York City Craft Beer Week and Adam Levy from the New York International Beer Competition. So we have a loaded show today. It's Valentine's, but we're not really talking about Valentine's. The news of the day that everyone's been waiting for in New York City is the second annual Time Out beer issue, which we have here. It's the preview.
Pretty exciting.
Chris, this is awesome. You've been doing a service to the whole beer community. Tell
Thanks,
us what made you so interested in craft beer and why you've been driven for 2 years now to do a special beer issue.
Wow, why was I interested in the first place? I think it went back to my mom being British. And when I was 18, started traveling to London, visiting her there. And I was like, you know, I was weaned on traditional English bitters. My grandfather was giving me London Pride and Adnams and stuff like that. So then I went to college and did the usual drinking of disgusting beers. But once I graduated and started writing about food and drink and travel a little more, I was just intrigued by all these stories behind the beer. Moved to New York, started coming to places like your fine establishment, and just kind of fell in love with the whole culture of it.
Well, I'll tell you, there's some really cool things in this issue. And one of my favorite parts is the new beers that have come to New York City.
Yeah, I'm excited about this story.
Tell us about the ones that you picked.
So just to give you a sense of the whole issue as it works, you know, last year we launched this idea of a beer issue. It was the first time we had ever done it. And I'm really excited that it's become an annual, which I think makes total sense the way that craft beer has really dug its claws into the New York scene. And since last year was the first year, we kind of took a general broad view of the whole New York beer scene. We talked about the best, you know, overall craft beer bars in New York, places like Blind Tiger, Jimmy's Number 43. What I'm excited about this year is we really focused on the here and now of beer in New York. So this story, Josh Bernstein, who I know has been on here a few times, just released his book, Brood Awakening, a really great beer writer. He rounded up 10 of the most exciting beers from that are both international and from other parts of the country that were never before available in New York. So we've got Yeasty Boys from New Zealand, Kissmeyer from Denmark, you know, Maine Brewing, which I see you've got some of here, Anchorage Brewing. And I just think that this cast is unbelievable. You know, they represent a lot of different styles. You're seeing people playing around with barrel aging, sours. You know, you see some session beers in here. You see a lot of the trends that people are talking about being articulated in these really pedigreed new beers.
It's pretty great. I mean, Jen, what do you think? You've been traveling a lot.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think of this lineup of
beers they picked? We are pretty lucky already with what we have available to us in New York markets like this. It's gotten really crazy, but it's always fun to get more and more in. I always try to, as I travel, seek out the beers that I can't get at home. But now there are fewer and fewer that I actually have to seek out because we're actually bringing them in, and we've got some really great distributors who are working this market and are really conscientious about keeping abreast of what's going on in this country and around the world. So it's to our benefit.
Well, one of the people that I felt really influenced the craft beer market in New York is our friend Josh Schaffner. He started a New York Craft Beer Week. What was that 4 or 5 years ago now?
Started in 2008.
And you have a secret background that I've been dying to ask you about. You never told anybody this. The reason that you knew so much about beer is that you've traveled the country for many years as a flight attendant.
That's
right?
True.
And
that's not a secret.
Well,
is that a secret?
How else would somebody know
secret,
so much about beer?
It's not quite worn on the sleeve.
Yeah. So there's a lot of beers that you get to come across that we don't even have in New York.
But you know what? I agree 100% with Jen. When I started traveling, it was this whole night and day situation where I don't want to in any way dismiss the New York beer scene that I obviously love dearly, but it was amazing to get out and about and find all these things you couldn't get. And I spent a significant amount of time in Chicago this past year, and it's down to like a small handful of breweries that we don't get here. It was kind of remarkable because
the luggage doesn't have to be quite so heavy.
It doesn't. But at the same time, there's more and more breweries throughout the country, and more breweries are smaller and focused on specifically their home and local markets. And it's almost more exciting now than it ever was before because there's so much out there and we have so much at home, and then there's also so much in traveling.
I found a new one that I didn't necessarily expect to find. I hadn't done my homework on New Orleans. When I went down there, I thought I might pay homage to Ray, which I did anyway, and just drink liquor, because he would always talk about it when he went down there, he'd just drink whiskey. And instead, I came to find that there was one brewery in particular that I was really impressed with, Nola Brewing. They've been around for 3 years, and they're great people, and they're doing a great job. I saw their facility. They've got a 20-barrel system, and they just broke into the Alabama market. So right now they're in Louisiana, Alabama, and just the Panhandle. But Stone went out there and did a collaboration that unfortunately we aren't going to get up here because it was at NOLA, so it's only in their market. But I tasted off the tank, and it was just delicious. I can't even remember the details of it. But it's fun because now every time I go back to places that I have been to or new places, there are going to be new breweries everywhere.
No, it's cool. I mean, there's so many great new breweries. And just from the Time Out beer issue and what we have in front of us, we had the Main Beer Company, which is up in Portland. And there was a nice profile of them in a Beer Advocate this winter, too.
They're really great.
They're amazing beers. We love them. And we're pouring the Anchorage, which is distributed here by the Shelton Brothers, whom we love. But they're coming all the way from Alaska. The guy's making, small amounts of beer, and he rents part of a brewery. And it's just amazing, this beer scene, and we're so proud to be part of it.
What beer is this?
This is the Tide and Its Takers, which is a triple that has Sriracha Ace.
Yeah,
hops in.
I was like, there's got to be some.
And I think like most
sriracha
of its beers, it's aged in I don't know if it's Chardonnay barrels, but you get that kind of vanilla and oak.
Yep, a tad of like tartness from the wine, but really nice.
There's Adam, what do you think about this?
I think it's definitely a Chardonnay cask on this one.
Mm-hmm. But you can taste that sriracha once you know those hops. They're so
specific. I'm going to keep bowing down before this issue because this is awesome. I mean, for New York City to have a whole issue about beer is really fun. And you got the Laughing Dog Brewery you mentioned from Idaho. And what's this? The Goozerla Tilquin from
Belgium.
Yeah,
I haven't heard of that one.
Goozerla Tilquin is actually one of my favorite new beers. It's this guy, Pierre Tilquin, who is the first new blender of lambics in Belgium since 1997. I guess, that's such an ancient tradition there, but you don't really hear of newcomers to the scene.
Right.
And he's really got a lot of attention, and it's beautifully balanced, really tart, really lemony. It's a great beer.
Huh. So, Chris, this it must be tough editing down this issue because there's so many really good places to drink beer in the city and so many new breweries.
It looks like you focused on the new beer bars, too.
We did,
you know,
yeah.
Instead, probably last year you were focusing on the
last year
the
was sort
classics.
Of a best of, and then this year was, we kind of cut it off at if it had opened within the last year. And this is kind of what you guys are all looking at in this magazine here is just about half of the content. TimeoutNewYork.com is going to have all of the rest. So we've got 10 new beer bars, a bunch of new beer stores. And there's really been a cool trend towards these hybrid spots that are either like a butcher and a bar, like the Cannibal. I don't know if you've been over there, Jimmy. That's a cool spot next to Resto.
Yeah, no, and the bar manager, Corey Bonfilio, he's a great guy. He's been on the show. And we know the guys from Resto, Christian, they're really awesome. And Billy, and what's the chef's name there? It's Resto. It's Billy Heller. Oh, man, someone's going to kill me for that. But it's an awesome place. I mean, it's these guys had Resto, and it was like a really good beer-centric restaurant. And now they've like gone the next step and put in an awesome beer bar, you know?
And I guess in addition to beer and meat, they're obsessed with bikes for whatever reason. So that's why it's called the Cannibal. It's the nickname of some famous Belgian cyclist. And you can buy stuff for your bike in there. You can buy unbelievable beers.
I've heard about the meat, too.
You can buy artisanal, you know, local meats.
You know the real sleeper story is? There's a guy, the Alewife Queens. That dude, Dan Lanigan.
Yep.
I met him years ago.
From Massachusetts.
He owned a place up in Amherst called the Moan and Dove. And then he's kind of expanded and rushed all around the East Coast. And I still haven't met him. I haven't seen him in years.
I've only heard about it.
What's Alewife
really nice
Queens
guy.
Like?
I haven't been out to the place. I met Dan at the Blind Tiger one time a few years ago, and he had two bars open at that point. But he's really like known as a great publican up there. And I hear that his bar in Long Island City is fantastic. And Long Island City is one of those markets that I feel is just ripe. And we're going to watch that boom because a lot of people are starting to move out there, but there aren't all the bars and restaurants and amenities yet. And so it's a great place for like small businesses, and that's what he tapped into.
Yeah, one of the cool things we saw covering all these new bars is places that are just popping up in neighborhoods that didn't really have anything. You know, Washington Heights, this place Buddha Beer Bar, place out in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn Tap House, and yeah, the Alewife is amazing. It's two stories. It's absolutely massive. And there's no real food options in that part of Long Island City too, so it's doing a lot of heavy lifting, and the selection is really cool. They've got a huge representation from all these new Scandinavian breweries.
Wow.
Evil Twin and a bunch of other ones that I won't try to pronounce, but I'm sure you guys have heard of, and it's a really impressively curated list over there.
Well, that's pretty cool. Well, Jen, how many of these beer bars would you like to visit with me? Have you been to Tap Room number 3?
When I stay in town long enough and I've got some days off, I'll join you. My problem, people always ask me, like, have you been out to so-and-so, and have you been out to so-and-so, and I tend to work so darn much, I'm behind, so I'm always talking to my friends to try to keep abreast of where I need to go, so maybe we should check them out.
And what's
just
your next
trip? Just go down the
trip?
List one by one.
Aren't you going to...
Oh, I've got the big ones coming up. In like less than 2 weeks, I'm going to take what I'm calling Jen's Sour and Smoke Tour of Europe. I'm going to Brussels and Bamberg, and I'm going to get to hang out, loiter around Cantillon for a few days and visit Brasserie de la Seine because Yvonne had a wonderful like custom system built that he described to me, but I want to see it. And then while I'm over there, I figure I may as well pick another beer city. So I'm going to go over to Bamberg and tour Weyermann Malt and Mars and Schlenkerla, of course. So get some smoke in there, too. I'm very excited. And I will, of course, report back. In detail.
We hope so. All right. So I want to ask a couple questions. This is there's a lot of heavy duty people here. This is a serious beer show. We've got Craft Beer Week founder. We got beer competition dude. We've got, you know, famous editor of a famous magazine. But we're just regular guys, and we're talking about beer. And if you go to greatbrewers.com, there's the good beer test. You get the 20 and the 100 questions. We're going to ask some questions and really see what these guys know. All right. We'll start with
go.
Josh is smiling. Josh, okay. The flag that inspired Francis Scott Key to write our national anthem, the Star-Spangled Banner, during the War of 1812, was sewn together in Okay, either A, Yuengling Brewery, Pennsylvania, Claggett's Brewery, Maryland, Anheuser Brewery, Missouri, or Rheingold Brewery in New York. Any takers?
My guess
is
Yuengling.
I'm going to feel like it's got to be East Coast.
I'm going to go with the Maryland.
I'm going Maryland.
All right, actually, it said it was sewn together in Yuengling Brewery in the state of
They're the oldest, so that, you know, I figure, yeah. Better chance.
Yeah, I don't think Rheingold started. I don't think New York beer scene really was kicking until, like, the mid to late 1800s.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Next, and Anheuser Brewery, come on. It's like...
We didn't even guess that one.
No. When a beer is said to be balanced, what are the two main flavor characteristics that offset each other?
Malt and hops.
Okay. A, hops.
I'm sorry, I'll just shut up.
Listen to me.
We got a ringer here.
It's a trick. This is a trick question. The guys at home. A, it's hop sweetness and malt bitterness. B, malt sweetness and hop bitterness.
Oh, it's tricky.
C, spiciness of the yeast and sweetness of malt. And D, astringency from alcohol and sweetness of malt. Chris.
I'm going to go with malt sweetness and hop bitterness.
Correct. All right. And the last one. I don't know why
Are
we're doing this.
Are you trying to challenge us? We're supposed to play. I mean, come
we're
on.
Doing this every week, and it's kind of fun.
Is
you know?
There like phone a friend and all that? Pull the Roberta's audience.
Maybe next year, this will be the beer quiz show. So, all right. What is one advantage that beer has over wine when pairing with food? Adam, this is a good one. Beer has fewer calories than wine. Beer has effervescence from carbonation and scrubs the palate. Beer is the world's most popular alcoholic beverage, or beer aids digestion.
How about E, all the above?
Good one. All right. It says beer has effervescence from carbonation and scrubs the palate. Is that true?
Yeah.
Is that why beer is better than wine with food pairing?
It's one of the reasons.
I think it's one of the reasons why it's a Prosecco, which really cleanses the whole palate.
I think it's the vast range of flavors in beer. Because you've got, you know, I mean, there are a lot of diverse wines, but there's a narrower range, and there's always going to be acidity, and acidity doesn't always go with all the food. So,
all right,
you know, you, yeah.
I'll tell you, we've got this panel warmed up. We're going to come back in a few minutes and talk more about beer on Beer Sessions Radio. Okay, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We've got a cool cast of all-stars here today. Jen Swartman from Blind Tiger, Josh Schaffner from New York City Craft Beer Week. He was just in the Midwest. He's got an accent. Adam Levy from New York International.
I feel like that accent's more Canadian now.
How would you pronounce your name, Josh?
Josh Schaffner.
That's too cool, man. Josh Schaffner. And Adam Levy from New York International Beer Competition. And Chris Schoenberger from Time Out New York, the beer issue. Chris, you guys, the second year in a row now, you've collaborated with Time Out with Six Point on a special beer for the Time Out beer issue. What beer do you have coming out this week?
So this year we did a Berliner Weiss. Last year, you know, I try to take advantage of the opportunity to make a beer with Six Point. It's such an awesome thing to do, make it tie in with the brand. Last year, since Time Out started in London, what we did was make kind of a classic porter, and then they gave it an American hop profile to kind of tie the New York and London offices together. And this year, you know, I think the thing a lot of people are talking about in the beer world is session beers. And we kind of said, what could you make? Like, we started battering ideas around. We talked about a mild, we talked about a Czech black beer, you know, a table saison or something like that. It was when I said Berliner Weiss that their ears perked up and they were like, yeah, we have to try that. They actually made it one of their mad scientists beers, and I'm biased. I think it's incredible. It's 3.4%. It's, as we were talking about before, that effervescence just like coats your palate. It's very lemony and then disappears really quickly. So it's a real palate cleanser.
What's it called?
It's called the Ich Bin Kein. You can ask them about that. AKA, you know, the official beer of the Timeout Beer issue. It's being released on Thursday at 7 p.m. At a bunch of bars. We're still confirming some of them, but about 20 bars. We'll be at Jimmy's, 61 Local over in Cobble Hill, Blind Tiger, and a bunch of other bars around town, Rattle and Hum. So we're really excited for people to get their hands on it. And I think it's something a little different from Six Point. They were really proud of it. It's got a lot of finesse, not the expected beer from them. And I think they really nailed it.
I was just going to say, I don't speak German at all, but I feel like Ich bin means I am.
Yeah. It's some sort of reference to
Jazz Schaffner.
A Kennedy quote or something like that. But if you call it Ich bin kein Berliner Weiss, it's like, I am a Berliner Weiss. Which I think is a good name for a beer.
Your story coming out, don't you?
Well, Berliner Weiss, it's a funny style because I have noticed that a lot of people, like if you go down to in Philly, Notting Head, their little brew pub on the second floor, it's one of their kind of go-to beers in the summer, Berliner Weiss. Peekskill Brewery with Chief, Jeff O'Neill, that's one of his first beers.
A couple weeks ago after you recommended it.
What was it like?
It was great, and they served it like, I guess you'll find it sometimes in Berlin, with a little sweet cordial to kind of
offset
the
sourness. Aren't they making the cordial, I think, there?
They are.
They're doing these artisanal in the kitchen. They're making these fun little additions that are not like the ones you get in
Germany. Yeah, they were different.
Germany.
I've heard in Germany you have like Woodruff and maybe raspberry, things like
they're
that.
They're green and there's a red one. Yeah. And they just are, you know, like a syrup, like a fake syrup.
Exactly.
So.
What I tried there was a juniper one, which was cool. And it did kind of cut through that tart sourness. I like that, but if someone was a little taken aback by that flavor, you know, it makes it a lot more mild.
Did it give it gin qualities, or?
Yeah, it did. I mean, that definitely came to mind as you were drinking it, for sure.
Wow.
No more need for gin and tonic anymore. You just take your Berliner Weiss.
Yeah,
with
and with the Berliner
Weiss. It's when it's 3.8%.
Yeah, you can drink about 25 of them.
You know, it's a good summer beer. There's something about it. It's a good beer. I think it's an easy beer to make, though, too.
That's my understanding.
People should chime in. If you're on there at beer_sessions and you want to Twitter in, let us know. I think that Berliner Weiss is a... apparently an easy style to make, and I think it's
the challenge is just using the lactobacillus, you know, culture and not messing up your equipment.
I think it also has to do with mash temperature and having that quality control in there, because you can end up kind of going crazy with the sour or other varieties.
What I'm trying to say is, I mean, people are into sour beers in different styles. I think it's a great style. I think more people should be making it. I mean, yeah,
I think that's why Peekskill, that's why Chief embraced that, because it could be a session beer. Mm-hmm. It could, with, you know, like with a ginger or something, they were talking about all these syrups, you know, it could become something that was a little like sweeter and a little interesting and maybe embraced by people who like wheat beers and lighter beers. And then it can also satiate the sour craving, which a lot of people have. And it's so hard to always have a sour. I know the Blind Tiger has a hard time keeping a sour beer on tap all the time. We'd love to. There just aren't enough of them for all the people who want to be drinking them right now. So it is a great
and
style.
Then a lot of the ones that we want to have are much more expensive because they're like rare sours. But
and
you
it
know,
takes
having
a long
good,
time to barrel yeah, age.
A good Berliner Weiss should be like a go-to style in many, you know, breweries. Lineup, that would be great.
I would love to see more of them, and that was one of the things we talked about. Six Point, you know, they're not out there that much, and hopefully this will introduce some people to it who haven't had it before.
No, we're looking forward to that. But yeah, Berliner Weiss, man. I mean, who has a good sour beer story? Come on, Josh.
I'm laughing just because I'm not gonna name the brewery, but years ago I went on an interview to be a brewery tours person, or, you know, somebody would conduct the tours at the brewery, And one of the interview questions was, you know, well, have you ever been to a brewery before? And I said, well, yeah, I've been to a few. I said, well, which ones have you been to? And I started rattling off the last couple of few that I'd been to. And this was when I was traveling probably 50 out of 52 weeks of the year. And I'd probably been to 100 breweries in the past, you know, year or so, and started rattling them off. And the interviewer just kind of looked at me like, wow, that's pretty absurd. Like, what's he doing here? And then I said that I had been to Belgium, and I'd been to Brussels, and I'd seen some of the Lambic and the Goosemakers and Cantillon in specific. And his eyes just lit up, and he's like, you've been to Cantillon? And it was just really interesting at the time. And they say sour is the new hoppy now. And so this is a couple of years ago, you know, before you could argue that sour really arrived in the United States. And to think that there was that appreciation for sour beers, it's kind of nice to see that it's finally coming around and more breweries are doing them. And as you're saying, I'm not a brewer, so I don't know the ease or the difficulty of making one beer variety versus another, but I can imagine it's a lot cheaper to do a Berliner Weiss than it is to set beer aside and age it and barrels and worry about infecting the rest of the brewery when you can just kind of throw in some lacto in there and have it be on its own.
Yeah, let's move. There's another beer that Chris brought. It's another new beer to New York, Midnight Sun from Alaska. Everybody taste that and say a few things about it, because it's pretty interesting.
This was actually too new to even put in this issue. I got it while we were closing it. But I brought it because it's Valentine's Day and it's cheekily named the Panty Peeler, which I thought was
What kind of beer is it? What is it?
I think is it a triple?
Belgian style triple. Yeah, it's a triple. And I've never had this beer before. Well, this whole brewery is new to the market, like we're saying, and I haven't been up to Alaska in a long, long time. So I've never had this, even though I've heard of it, but I've heard of the Panty Peeler. I guess the name rings true.
I think this is where Anchorage makes his beer. I think he's at Midnight Sun also.
Wait, what's that?
Anchorage, Gabe from Anchorage. I think he's actually making beer at Midnight Sun.
Oh, I see. So,
he's
okay.
Renting out. But,
can I comment on Jen commenting that she's heard of the Panty Peeler? Is that ominous in some way, shape, or form?
No personal experience with it, because today's the first time I'm trying it. But I think maybe it's won an award. I feel like it's been listed somewhere and got a chuckle and, you know. Yeah.
My favorite beer today so far is the Anchorage beer.
That one's amazing.
I would definitely agree with you.
It's a sour beer, too.
It's really just popping on the palate there.
And Josh, just enough
tell us
of the Chardonnay influence.
Josh, you traveled. You were just out somewhere.
So I've got a really good friend who he spent the last probably about 7 years now living in San Juan, Puerto Rico. And every time I'd go to see him or every time he'd come visit, he was just in awe at how much good beer we could get, not necessarily here in New York City, but anywhere, quote unquote, on the mainland. And I haven't been down there in a little bit, so I'm not fully familiar, but apparently there's a new distributor in Puerto Rico, and they're bringing in all kinds of amazing beers. And for anyone who's traveling anytime in the near future, I hear that now, if you're taking a vacation out to San Juan, you can find some really good stuff. But he moved, my friend, to Minneapolis, and so now when I go to visit him, I'm out in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, and obviously when you talk about beers you can't get elsewhere, Surly was so popular that they pulled out of all the markets outside of Minnesota, and it's just a pleasure.
I've had a couple of these, and they're excellent, and they are sort of legendary in that neck of the woods.
There's a certain appeal also because they're they're canned. The only bottle they do that I'm aware of is a special release that they do once a year. And so other than that, you know, they're kind of in on this this movement for canning beer, which is incredible. Because
how long have they been around?
That's a really good question. Yeah. I want to say 2006, but I could be horribly wrong on that.
Okay. So if they started canning back then, they were really on the forefront.
Yeah.
And they've got the tall boy can, too. It's the pint can, which is the first pint can I think I'd seen in the craft beer world.
I'm excited he brought this because I've never had any of these beers. And I've heard
the smell of the Furious.
Talk us through. We've got Furious right now. What's that? Surly Furious.
The thing about Surly beers, and it's, to my understanding, a little bit tongue-in-cheek, they defy style guidelines, as so many breweries and beers do these days. And so, you know, the Furious, I want to say, is kind of their notion of an IPA. I'm sure that somebody more familiar with the brewery could.
Maybe.
And then set me back.
This is canned.
Yeah, doesn't have the impact in that respect. But man, that beer is spared.
Yeah, but
no light. It's really like the first thing you get off this beer is the amazing like dry hopped aroma.
Josh,
hops.
Just read us the labels. Come on, man. We got Furious.
So we've got Furious. We've got Bender, which is kind of their brown ale of sorts. We've got Coffee Bender, which is their cold pressed coffee infused Bender. We've got the Surly Wet Hop, which I'm kind of curious to taste at this point in time because obviously as a wet hop beer, it was made earlier in the year. I think I picked it up there in August, and I've kind of been sitting on it in my fridge and curious how those wet hop flavors have.
Well, this is a good test of the canning.
Yeah, good test of canning and to, you know, my electric bill in the fridge. And,
Jen, what do you think about canning? Canning versus bottles.
I have to say that I was skeptical when these first craft breweries were doing it. And the reason I was because I was always kind of scared of aluminum. You know, you're not supposed to be in contact with and ingesting a lot of aluminum. So I thought it might be kind of dangerous. And then I went ahead and did a little homework. And I'm not a scientist and I can't tell you about the chemistry, but it did seem like they've made huge advances in the way they line these cans so that there isn't leaching of the properties of the aluminum.
There's no leaching whatsoever. I mean, the same way when you go to the supermarket and you buy a can of beans, you might be a little leery if it's dented because that might change the epoxy and the way it's interacting with the contents inside. But as I understand it, all these cans are coated with a corn-based epoxy, so it's actually... It's not the PVC plastic that everybody was, worried about these days, but it's a corn-based epoxy, and there's zero contact from the beer or the similar technology, you know, the beans or corn or whatever it is in your canned goods interacting with the metal. The only contact it has is when you pour it, and obviously that's a very quick transfer. And
right. And the result is that there is no, you know, light affecting that beer as it's stored. So they really, it really does preserve it, and I understood that part of it, but I was a little scared about those chemical things that I'm not scared of
anymore.
Or
oxygen leach.
Yeah.
So it's really a marvelous way of kind of keeping beer. It's more or less a mini keg.
All right. We're here with the beer scene all-stars on Beer Sessions Radio. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Just a handful.
And we've got a lot more to talk about. Cheers.
4, 5, 7, 8, 9.
Okay, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're here with the Beer All-Stars. We've got New York Craft Beer Week, New York International Beer Competition, Time Out in New York, Blind Tiger, Jimmy's number 43. Josh Schaffner from New York Craft Beer, tell us about the beers you brought us from Surly, Minnesota.
And in no particular order, I just kind of, when I was last out there, I went to the liquor store and I picked up everything they had in stock. Which is always a fun way to go when you can't choose. So I've got Surly Furious, Bender, Coffee Bender, the Cynic Ale, and the Abrasive Ale, and the Surly Wet. And personally, the Coffee Bender was the first beer that I had from them that really turned me on and into my appreciation of the brewery because I'm not a coffee drinker. I don't enjoy the taste of coffee. I'm also kind of against caffeine.
Okay, but the beer
but the thing is, the beer
is incredible. I love the flavor behind it. I can really appreciate the notes that the coffee adds. I don't know if it's the difference to do with hot pressed versus when you brew a cup of coffee, it's hot, but it's or rather cold pressed. But it's an amazing beer, and I started discovering more and more of their beers, and currently the Abrasive, which is their limited seasonal release that's out right now for anyone who's kind of traveling through the Minnesota area that can get a hold of it. It's their double IPA, and it's incredible.
What is this with Surly? I mean, I read today that there's some beer they have that's being sold on eBay for $400 a bottle or something, Darkness or something.
Yeah, so they make a beer called Darkness. I've tasted it once, but it was in one of those gatherings where you just taste so many beers that you kind of had trouble remembering which is which. And, you know, it seems like Imperial...
So it didn't stand out that much.
Well, you know, honestly, it
not
didn't.
Not $400 worth.
Imperial Stouts, it seems, from a variety of different breweries are really making the waves for being this incredibly sought-after beer. And part of me wants to say that knowing in my travels how much good beer there is across the country, I don't want to say that these beers are not good, but it's more or less like a privilege you get to put on your wall afterwards. It says, you know, I've tasted this, I got a hold of this, and... I'm sure they're great beers, but, you know, are they worth that?
Definitely. And, you know, that brings us to our next guest, because the reason that we have Adam Levy here from International... Tell us what it is, Adam.
Sure. I'm the founder of the New York International Beer Competition.
Okay. The reason you're on the show is that you're attempting to what? Set a standard for industry for beer? Well, I don't quite understand what you're doing.
Sure. My philosophy, and I started this first with the New York International Spirits Competition and the New York International Wine Competition. And my philosophy is basically that all our judges are trade buyers. And because the trade buyer truly has a chance to interact on a day-to-day basis with the consumer, knows what the consumer wants, whether it's yourself or Jen, they know what the consumer wants. Because the consumer will say, okay, what do you like? And here's what I recommend.
Right.
So a trade buyer will know what a consumer wants. And I mean, I'm a blogger, I'm on the media, I write about stuff, but guess what? I don't interact on a day-to-day basis with the press. Like, I'm one person's opinion. Someone like Jen or yourself.
But do you think that when, so you're going to set what a guideline, or you're just going to give awards? Tell us what your event's going to mean to the world of beer.
Sure. Basically, what we do is we basically judge the categories. We use the same categories as the World Beer Cup. It is around 85-plus different categories. And we basically do a blind tasting. We bring all the beers out, example of what's called Hefeweizen. We bring all the Hefeweizen beers out in front of the judges. Okay, here's the Hefeweizen beers categories, all the beers in the Hefeweizen categories, and here's the retail price. Because, again, as a trade buyer, you're making decisions not just based upon the beer, but also by the price. Because is it an $8.99 six-pack or a $15.99 six-pack? And you may think,
so you're factoring in price in a competition where it's still blind.
Correct.
But good you're point. Having to, but you're taking two things into account, quality mm-hmm. and value.
Yes.
Got it.
Because my mentality is really for the consumer in the end. So for the consumer to walk in the door to, let's say, a great beer store, like Beer Craft, we were talking about earlier, and said, okay, what do you recommend for Hefeweizen for $8.99? Here's what I recommend for $8.99. What do you recommend for $15? So I'm going to Jimmy's house. I want to impress Jimmy. Here's what I reckon for $15. You know, what's a great value?
Right.
And the whole idea is, again, it's a blind tasting. The only person who knows what all the beers are is myself. And because of that, I don't judge anymore because I'm biased. Because obviously there's some brewers out there who I just have a great personal connection with, who I love their dream, they love their strategy, love their story.
It's interesting because I personally approach wine that way and mm-hmm. have for years, where it's like, okay, I walk up to somebody who knows more than I do, since I can admit that I don't know nearly as much about wine as I do about beer. And I'm like, okay, I really just want a decent, cheap bottle of wine tonight, or I want to spend $15. And so it's really approaching that with beer where I'm, you know.
No, like, yeah, definitely that's the case. I mean, that whole started when we first did the spirits competition first. And we first did it by categories and by price range. So let's say we do Irish whiskeys. We bring all the Irish whiskeys out, $30 to $50, and we judge them that way. The problem what happened was we did the same thing for wine. So we did wines, let's say $15 or less, $15 to $30, $30 to $45, whatever it is. And the wine judges beat me up that day of the competition. Beat me up. It says, is it an $8.99 wine or a $14.99 wine? That's a different buyer. An $8.99 buyer is different than a $14.99 buyer. Just like a $16 bottle wine retail is different than a $29 bottle.
Right.
So going forward, and are all competitions, we naturally put down the actual retail price. So we did that really for the first time, the spirits competition back in October. We had around almost 400 spirits, and we judged it by the same format, by the category, and by the price. So this way, you know, let's say Añejo tequilas. We bring all the Añejo tequilas out, $30 and less, 30 to 50, 50 and above. But the judges will know that this Añejo tequila is a $32 tequila or $48 tequila. And that's what I'm making the decisions based upon if they would buy it or not.
Right. I think that's a great distinction because we have to do that all the time, even in bars and in restaurants.
It's a practical way to look at it.
There's some things that are you're going to sell at a pint, and some things you have to sell, you know, by the bottle or goblet. And the price range, even with beers, is really huge these days.
It's definitely growing.
Let Chris say something.
I think it speaks to the maturation of the beer market right now, because Jen is exactly right. That's what a sommelier is for. You go in and you say your price point, you say vaguely what you like in whatever language you know, and their job is to get you that bottle that's going to be the perfect bottle at your price point. I think traditionally people didn't think that way because they think beer is cheap, you know, it's not going to be more
but
than
it's changing,
$6 to $8
changed
a pint. It's totally changed, and with, you know, some of these bottles we've got on the table coming in from Anchorage, they're brewed once ever. They're aged in barrels. Like,
they've got to travel, and
or
if it's an import,
they're bumping up the price. And, you know, not to say they're not amazing, but there is, there's new values being placed on the beers.
There is a buying decision.
Someone needs to help you make those decisions.
No, I agree. It's a buying decision. And one other thing I'd like to add is that in all our competitions, we make sure it's commercially available. Now, the beer competition coming up February 26th, we're doing it at Jimmy Carbone's, which is a great bar, obviously, but
Jimmy's number 43.
Jimmy's 43, apologize. Number 43 is that unless it's commercially available, I love when beers are undiscovered. I mean, Chris put together a phenomenal list of like amazing new beers in New York. That's great. We love those type of beers. We also like beers that's new to the United States. Because, example, last year at our spirits competition, I was telling Josh here, is like South African distillery swept the awards with the amazing brandies. Whoever thought to be amazing brandies in South Africa, but they won based upon the category and by price.
Yeah,
and they've been in the United States before. So we look for the new find. We like to find that what's here existing. So there's a chance for it's like Jen or Jimmy to basically rediscover in a blind tasting the beers they love already, and also discover new beers.
Right,
that's the whole point.
Okay, so after the competition, it's a judging event. When are you going to announce the winners?
And how?
And what do we look for?
That's a good question. We'll probably put the press release out a couple days afterwards. I'm also running at a great seminar showcasing some of the top winners at the New York Craft Beer Week. I'm running in the Connoisseur's Lounge on March 3rd at the Armory. We're also going to be later doing a press consumer event in April, and we're going to showcase the winners there also. And it's my goal is to market the winners, you know? And that's an important part of the whole process. We want people to say, here's what the top, because reality is.
But how are you going to, like, they're going to win what? You're going to say, this is the best what?
Sure.
$8 six-pack beer, this is the best 15?
Sure. We basically award, that's a good question. We award medals based upon bronze, silver, gold, double gold. Bronze means the trade buyer will buy it. Silver means they really like it. Gold means they love it. Double gold's phenomenal.
Okay, Adam, take a step back. Okay.
Sure.
So right now, Chris and I are drinking the Surly Cynic Ale, not available outside of Minnesota, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is a tall boy, how many ounces?
16.
Tall boy, 16-ounce can. How much would you pay for this, Jen?
Well, okay, before I answer that, what I was going to say interestingly enough, with his concept of a beer competition, it becomes geographically specific because it's also how much are those judges in the New York market paying for that beer? They're not necessarily living right down the road from the brewery. So it's sort of like, what is our price here in this area of the country?
It's a good point. We basically asked the brewers to basically list it as if they're going to submit the beer to, let's say, Esquire magazine. Not that Time Out's not important, but let's say Esquire magazine.
Okay.
And they're going to say, here's a beer, whatever around the country. What is it retailing for?
oh, what is it retailing for?
Yes.
But the, but okay, so then, but when it comes to buying, then it's more about wholesale price, because that is a margin that's really hard to hit as a bar owner. You know, how, what you've got to make your markup. And if you're paying a huge amount of money for that keg to, you know, be transported, when you can get a cheaper keg that's brewed around the block, then geography does that, make a huge difference.
But Jen, let me go back to us.
I'm sorry.
We're awesome. This is an awesome conversation. But I'm trying to say this. Let's go on the back end. So,
okay, so that
pricing,
can.
How much would you pay for this beer?
Petty Topper, which is one of our favorite new canned beers that's not available in New York yet, but is being brewed by the alchemist John Kimmick up in Waterbury, Vermont. He charges $3 retail for a pint can of his Hetty Topper double IPA.
So a six pack's what, like, $18?
Well, it's a four-pack.
Four-pack.
And so it ends up being $12. So, you know, I think these are in that same, like, range as far as, you know, quality. So that's what, I mean, that, and that's a lot of, that's actually a lot of money to spend on four canned beers. But I think if you're thinking $3 a pint, that's not bad.
And then Josh, when you bought this beer, what did you pay for this?
Well, see, this is why Jen is so good at what she does, because she hit the nail exactly on the mark.
I had no idea.
I don't remember fully which was which, but of this variety of six beers from Surly, I paid anywhere from $9.99 for the four pack, because they're also sold in the four pack, to $15.99 for the four pack.
Okay.
And I want to say the abrasive was the $15.99 at the four pack. So if you want to compare a double IPA from the Alchemist to a double IPA from Surly,
on the average, three.
It was a little bit more expensive for the Surly.
And then Chris, for you guys, when you're at timeout, do you guys judge the prices of beer, you know, based on retail or six pack or anything? Or you're just basing it on what people like or what's hip?
A little bit. I mean, really, we're looking for quality things to get people excited about introducing them to new beers. If it's prohibitively expensive and we just think it's completely out of line, that is something we take into account. And, you know, we were talking about giving the press a retail price and things like that. And we always have to find a place. Time Out New York is all about what to do this week. So we always have to find somewhere that's serving this beer. It can be tough with something like Hill Farmstead. Usually we call a Blind Tiger or a Jimmy's, where, you know, you can find these hard to find beers. But unless it's completely insane, we're just looking for stuff to get excited about.
All right. So Adam, this is a little background, but we're really excited that you're starting your New York International Beer Competition this year. And we know that from this, you're going to grow a lot. And anybody that signed up so far in terms of either judges or special beers that you want to let us know about?
Well, I can't say what beer submitted already. The philosophy is we do not announce who submitted. We only announce the winners.
Can you tell us how many entries you've had?
No.
Okay. Fair enough. No, I just was asking. No, that's why.
No, that's a good question, because it's the reason why I don't announce who submitted, because it's still a subjective process.
Okay.
How about how many categories?
He said it was about 85.
We have
85
categories, but we basically have probably around less than half filled as at this point. But again, also,
so you're saying who needs to be part of this competition? Let's do outreach here.
Sure.
Who should send you beer?
Any commercial available brewery or distributor who has a beer available in the United States who wants to put their beers in front of the top buyers, beer buyers and judges in the country, send us our way. And you can go to the NYIBeerCompetition.com. That's NYIBeerCompetition.com.
All right.
And we'll be marketing these results, again, showcasing the winners at the NYC Craft Beer event at the Armory. We'll be also announcing, publishing the results, Mutiner Magazine, the Bar Biz Magazine, which is a good trade magazine, and also Ale Street News, a good East Coast regional newspaper.
And I have to ask, and you might not be able to answer, but
try me.
Your judges, how far-reaching are they? I mean, how far are they coming from to judge this?
I really look for judges in the New York metro area.
Yeah.
And these judges come from, like, basically Southern Connecticut, Long Island, most northern New Jersey, New York City.
So to be realistic, at this point of the game, in the first year, the results really are going to be more beneficial and useful for, like, this Northeast tri-state type area, just because your judges are here, the beers are probably, a lot of them are like the ones that are coming to this market.
I think what Adam Zone also...
I'd like to answer that one, if I can.
Go for it.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
Saying that's a good point. I don't view this as a just Northeast thing or New York thing.
I don't think you should. I think maybe this first year.
Because New York has a certain panache and allows the person in Akron, Ohio, or Biloxi, Mississippi, or Colorado Springs, Colorado, says, hey, that's some of the top buyers in New York, says, this is a great beer. And I've also had that same experience, and also international, because, again, it's still the New York International Beer Competition. I had the same experience in a wine and the spirits competitions, okay, where I have beer and, well, wines and spirits submitted that's never been in the United States before.
I think it's important, though, in the future, as mm-hmm. you continue with this and mm-hmm. it's successful and it expands, that you really strive to get a good representation of palates from all across the country. Because I think that while we have come a long ways, and sure, we have the panache of being New York as far as beer goes, we're still coming along and we're in general behind. And so it would be better to get as even a representation as you could to legitimize it nationally. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, I honestly, I've not had that issue on the spirits and the wine side. If you feel, again,
beer's a little different.
Again, listen. I'm a beer freak. You know, I first off as a beer freak, and I'll say this openly. My dog's name is Garrett Oliver. Okay, so I'm a beer freak.
We'll let Garrett know that next time.
I tell him that every time I see him, he still forgets me. But
hold on, let's have Chris have a question too. So,
just to Jen's point and this interesting conversation that's going on, I would love to hear what people think about the idea of New York as a beer town at this point. Is it one of the great beer towns in America? It's kind of one of the questions I raised in the beer issue.
So when the Beer Week started in 2008,
New York Craft Beer Week?
New York Craft Beer Week started, one of the principal reasons that it started was because I had been doing all this traveling and everybody said that there was no beer to be found in New York. They came to New York for a Broadway show. They came to New York to see a game and they felt they couldn't find any beer. And what I tried to impress upon those people in my own personal interactions was that New York is a very, very, very big city. And we have more population than the vast majority in fact, we are the number one population center in the country, and that if you can find something in New York, it's going to be in much limited quantities that you would find something elsewhere because of how it's appeared representatively.
That being said, we are also privileged with how much we're getting from the outside world, be it from Europe, be it from the West Coast. We are like a crossroads, which is why New York is New York.
And I didn't feel that people appreciated that nearly enough, not to mention our homegrown talent. So that was kind of the impetus that the Beer Week started. And since then, it's been dramatic. All of the places that are featured in Chris's articles in this current issue of Time Out, the vast majority were not open 4 years ago. And, you know, it's just...
Momentum has taken hold.
Momentum
definitely
has fully taken hold. And I would argue that New York, both by volume and by level of quality, so that, you know, those are kind of, in my opinion, the two
quality
markers
of
that
what?
By quality of the product and of the experience. I think we have both more and as good as any other beer market
and I
in
will
North
argue
America.
And you know, the listeners can hate me for it, but I really think that we're coming along with leaps and strides,
Jen,
and we still have a ways to go.
Tell us your top three beer markets in America.
I think states. I can give you states. How's that? I mean, San Diego, Northern California, Portland, Colorado are three of my favorites. I think they're strong. I think they're established. And I think the collective palate of the consumer base is advanced enough that they demand high quality from their brewers. And if you don't deliver that quality, you might be jeopardized. And out here, we are still tolerating collectively some mediocrity here and there. I mean, we love our brewers and we're coming along, but we're getting there, and we're getting there fast because we
are
New York,
right,
with the population.
Right. I read in Beer Advocate, again from the winter issue, they were talking about, they called it the home autocracy, where they're like, because it's local, everybody says it's great. And you're right. You know what? I will say one thing. New York State is making a lot of beer. We're really looking forward to it growing. I feel like there's going to be an opportunity for a lot of new breweries to do well in this area of New York City. And I also think we have a long way to go. So, Adam, last thing before we close out, anything more about your awards and what you've learned tonight from talking to us on Beer Sessions Radio?
I learned that Jen knows a lot more than me.
So maybe Jen should be your top judge at this
Well, what's funny is I applied to him to, and he asked for a beer resume that I didn't have time to write, and so I just ended up just not even.
Asked for a beer resume from Jen?
No, it wasn't.
Adam,
he didn't know who I was. She's like some beer bartender. Who's that?
You know something? Your presence alone is worth it.
Aw.
Thank you. All right, and that is, let's do a closing. Let's go around the room. Jen, anything else you want to say about the state of beer? In America.
Haven't I said enough for today?
And one more time, where are you going? Your next trip is where?
You know what? I'm going to be here next week so we can talk
about it. Tell me again. It's called Smoke and Something.
I named it because I like a theme, and it's Jen's Sour and Smoke Tour of Europe. And it's awesome. Brussels and Bamberg.
Josh, anything you want to tell us about your next travels and any beers we should expect from you soon?
I mean, my next travels are kind of unimportant to this conversation, but I would say everyone should come to New York and really dive into the suggestions in Chris's article and get out there. I think it's a disservice to the breweries that we've had this whole time to say that New York isn't a destination to be had.
Thank you. And Adam, tell us where should we find out more about your competition?
Please go check out www.nybeercompetition.com.
All right. And Chris, anything else to say about your awesome year two beer issue?
Just coming off that conversation, I'm going to say, you know, I'm going to play the booster here. I think New York is really coming along. And when you don't necessarily see it if you're reading the articles, but I think people who drink beer a lot will see when I came up with what we would cover in this issue, I was really thinking, what makes a good beer town? The bars. We always had that, and we always get the best beers in. Brew pubs, now that's tough. You know, real estate in New York, that's really tough. But there's this place like 508 Gastro Brewery, which we've gotten here. It's this scrappy way of figuring out how to do a brew pub, even though you can't necessarily do it the way you might do it in Portland or Chicago. And then finally, the last piece is the breweries. And I think we're coming along. I think 6 points... incredible. Bronx Brewery is kicking off. All these New York places, Crossroads, Long Island, Spider Bite that we covered. You know, it's getting there.
It's exciting. It really sure is exciting time. For the advancement and the future of it.
And one of the New York things is New York Tap, which does come up in the spring. And last year, Barrier Brewing from Long Island won Best New York State Brewery. And Crossroads up in Athens, New York did win Best Hudson Valley Brewery. So the two of the newer breweries and the smallest breweries are just starting out. So I think New York has a long way to go.
And I'm excited.
We're all behind it.
Last year we covered Barrier and Greenpoint in the beer issue. And look at what they've done. They're everywhere. They're making incredible beers. So I hope that the people who are in the beer issue this year have the same success.
Well, I'll say this. Chris, having Time Out New York on board and promoting New York beer is great. Good Beer Seal, thegoodbeerseal.com, is going to have a lot of things coming up this year. We'll be picking certain bars and other things. And I know this year you'll be part of the secret writers committee. So I know you're going to weigh in a lot of things.
That.
Let's give a shout out to some events coming up in New York area. The Handcrafted Tasting Company is gearing up for the first New York City American Craft Beer Festival on March 3rd at the Lexington Avenue Armory. That's one of the places where Beer Sessions Radio, we're programming Adam Levy. He's going to tell us about that, Adam, one more time.
Sure. I'll be running the one of the seminars at the Connoisseurs Lounge, showcasing some of the top winners from the New York International Beer Competition.
Great. And Clay Gordon is going to do a special beer and chocolate pairing as well. So again, check out the New York City American Craft Beer Festival. You can go to goodbrazil.com. There's a link to that. A couple other things. Go to IPA Night at Beer Craft on February 18th. Dogfish Head Night at the Pony Bar February 28th. Again, always check out goodbrazil.com for really good beer events. In closing, I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Again, special thanks to Jen, Adam, Josh, and Chris for joining me here tonight on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Brie O'Connor, and guest coordinator, Brett Thompson. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Pull out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind. And sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening. She's sipping vermouth and she thinks I'm uncool.